Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your Tuesday Morning Show host. And listeners, I have a rare treat, a great surprise for us this morning. We've not done this before that I'm aware of on the Tuesday Morning Show here in Sandpoint. I am happy to be able to introduce to you this morning Dr. Guy Worthy. He is a professor of physics and astronomy at Washington State University down in Pullman. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning.
So glad to have you. Now, listeners, I've got him on Zoom and I get to see him, but you'll only have the recording. But he's has a very friendly face, and I am so looking forward to this talk. Anyway, Dr. Worthy, Guy Worthy, if you would, please tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be professor of physics and also astronomy down at Washington State University.
Sure. Well, of course, I'll summarize my life story, I suppose. I was a nerdy kid and ended up being an astronomy major in college, and then I went on to grad school and a couple of jobs down the road, this Washington State University job opened up and I applied and I got the position. So that was an assistant professor. That was back in 2001.
That's great. We're going to be talking about many things astronomy today, night skies, and all the interesting things a person could do if they wanted to travel down to Pullman. But before we began this recording, you told me you originally grew up in Wyoming. That must have been a great night sky state to be a kid in.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, Wyoming's quite, it has good dark skies, and it's fairly high altitude as well. And sure, I saw some good sights down there. That said, I grew up in the suburbs,
Oh, so not
so
quite as starry as maybe possibly some other parts of Wyoming, but still.
yeah, probably worse than Sandpoint.
I would, well, never know. It's pretty bright in Sandpoint these days. Well, you've told me what attracted you to the field, being a nerdy kid and interested in astronomy, and you have had a very successful career. You've been a teacher, researcher, and also kind of taking charge down at the planetarium in Pullman. Tell us a bit about that. Your work.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a professor's work is split up between administration and teaching and research. And so I do all those things. I teach, sure, using things like the planetarium, anything from preschool to graduate student level. So I do teach a lot. And I research galaxies. I want to know how they form, and I want to know what chemical elements they contain and how those elements got where they are today.
And you have done some important research, I understand. And if I may not get this quite right, but you'll correct me about elements in galaxies, right? The various ways they can be put together. Is that a little
That's
bit
right.
right?
Yeah, that's right. I tend to use spectra. A lot. Spectra are the rainbows where you feed the light from a galaxy through a spectrograph and spread it out so you can see the different colors, but in finer detail than just color, red and green. So what happens is you can see little features in there, little dark bands in those spectra, and those are from individual little atomic transitions that you don't ordinarily notice, but for an astronomer, they give a lot of information in there. So yeah, I try to figure out ages and metal content and even element by element abundance ratios.
Yeah, it sounds pretty involved and also very interesting. Wonderful.
I tend to like it. I keep doing it.
You stuck with it, so you must like it.
More.
Well, we won't feel like the most beginners then of your students if you work with little kids at the planetarium. So that helps me feel a bit more confident to ask you these basic questions. Well, of course, it's a big universe out there, and we'll only see a tiny bit of it when we're looking up at night, especially if we're in town. But let's have you do an astronomy 101, a short one for us, and just talk to us about what sorts of interesting sights we might see in the night sky with our naked eye, and then we'll move on to other ways we can see more.
Sure. Of course, in the daytime, mostly you see the sun, which is by itself quite an interesting object. If you can look through that with a telescope, with an appropriate filter, please never look at the sun with your eye. But sun is really fascinating to watch. But after that sets, you get Twilight, sometimes you'll get some bright spots shortly after twilight. Those are going to be planets like Venus and Jupiter. And then the stars will come out. All the stars you see are in our galaxy, the Milky Way. They're at different distances and they have vastly different surface temperatures and absolute luminosities. So we see kind of a random grab bag of Milky Way stars.
Yes, and I mean, some of us know the basic ones and they come and go over the course of the year, but they're just so darn many that a person wouldn't know anything about. They're beautiful, but un kind of unfathomable to most of us. Is
The
every
ones
darn is every star that we look at out there identified? I suppose it must be.
Every star you can see with your eye definitely has several catalog numbers. So that's where astronomers start, is a catalog number. The brightest ones are so famous that they do have individual names. And you've heard of some of them, like Sirius and Betelgeuse and
Yes.
Rigel.
Big Dipper and the Seven Sisters is that one, the North Star.
Most of the characters in Harry Potter are astronomical.
Well, now that is actually a good tip. That will help me try and identify the stars in the night sky. I like that one. Didn't expect
You're like, Bellatrix, what's that? Oh, yeah, it's a star.
that. That's a good one. Well, of course, we know there are going to be multitude of stars, but beyond planets and stars, there are other kind of interesting occasional sightings, things like meteors, etc. Tell us about those types of agents.
Sure. Typically, you'll always be able to spot some satellites. They don't blink like airplanes do, and they glide slowly through the sky. And so these days you'll see a lot of satellites. Meteor showers, yes, you can see meteors. The kind of the random ones, we call those sporadic meteors, get more of those in the fall than the spring. And then they also come clumps. So the next big shower, I think, is the Perseid meteor shower. And that's in August 12th. So the evening of August 12th, it peaks. That's a nice one, though. It's got a very broad peak. So a week before, a week after, anywhere in that range is going to be fine.
I can tell you that's one that I've had the opportunity to look at, and it's really fun. It's August or around that time of the year. It's kind of nice and warm out, and you can just lie out on your deck and wait for some meteor. That's
That's
a cool.
exactly. A lot of astronomy is really relaxing. So you're going to just spend a lot of time just appreciating nature and looking up at the night sky. Meteors only last a second or so, and they'll catch your eye, and by the time your eye has caught them, they're gone.
That's right. Well, okay, we've covered satellites and meteors, but there are also every once in a while a comet, right? Comets can be coming along. I think there was one last summer.
Yes, comets are rare and sometimes beautiful and sometimes disappointing too, but they can be really spectacular if they're placed well. So we've had a few really bright comets lately, and that's kind of cool. Yeah, some of them are on predictable sort of less than 200-year orbits, so we get to see them periodically, and others are on very long orbits. We basically can see them once in human history and then they're gone.
Once in human history, not even a human life.
Right.
The rare one. Well, we can't be talking astronomy without asking, of course, the most important question of the interview, which is UFOs. Now, how many have you seen?
I'll tell you a story. I saw one when I was living in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there were these blinking lights through the trees, and I was a relatively young buck at the time, so I go loping off through the trees to try to catch a better look, and I did. It went from unidentified to identified. I was able to do an ID once I got a full view. It was the Budweiser blimp.
That's really good. That's a good one. Yeah,
Plastic
unidentified.
lights all over it, spectacular. It was there. Then I realized, oh yeah, it's the day before a football game. So that's why there was a blimp in town.
That is a good one. That's a good one. I have not had a UFO experience, so there is still hope for me then. Very nice. Let's talk a little bit about the whole issue of light pollution because it's a big deal, isn't it?
It is a growing big deal. Yes,
And
we human beings are turning night into day, and it's by and large unhealthy.
You spoke to me about this before we started recording this interview, and I assumed it was just a problem for people like you, astronomers, or those of us who want to enjoy as much as we can in the night sky, but it's more than that. Tell us about it.
Oh yeah, it affects quite a lot of things. It affects the patterns of nature quite a bit. It can it's especially bad in certain biological situations because a lot of creatures are attracted to light or use light to navigate. So it makes navigation for birds that migrate quite different. And it was a big problem for sea turtles because baby sea turtles being born on the beach will navigate toward the light because the starlight sprinkling over the water of the ocean is brighter than the forest that's on the land side. So they'd always walk toward the light. But when the light reversed with when people had lights inland, they started walking the wrong direction, the
Oh,
baby turtles.
right. That's terrible.
Yeah, so it really caused a big dip in population for sea turtles.
Yeah, and I don't know how one would repair that at this moment. Is it maybe just human intervention?
Yes, actually, yes. So, belatedly, they got the lights out of some places that were key beaches for sea turtles, but they also, the zoos and other conservation efforts were needed to stabilize the population.
That makes perfect sense. As we move, we'll talk a bit more about light pollution and the ability to view what we'd like to see in the night sky. And a question that came to mind for me was really how far away from a town or from, neighborhood that's well lit at night does one have to get in order to have some decent viewing?
In Idaho, not too far because the cities aren't super big, so it doesn't take too much. If you're on the East Coast, it's a lot harder. If you're in a dark spot, you can see about 6,000 stars,
Wow,
and
that's
that's
cool.
amazing. Yeah, it's a lot. It's quite a lot. In a city, you might see the brightest 50 or so. Unless you're in a big city like New York, and then you probably can't see any.
Well, it's interesting, to think that you could grow up in a city like that and rarely see a star, maybe see the moon. That would be an unusual life to never really see the night sky if you didn't get out of town.
Right. And most people are not in the habit of looking up, and they are in a light polluted environment, and there's nothing to see when you do look up. So it's kind of self-reinforces this kind of vacuum. It's kind of a fundamental part of human existence we used to experience every night, and now we don't experience it at all.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. How has that affected the field of astronomy? Are as many people entering the field as once were?
That's actually a difficult question to ask. Astronomers are rare. There are not very many, and there never have been very many astronomers. During my lifetime, there's always been more people wanting to be astronomers than there can be astronomers. So that's I feel lucky and privileged every day that I
Yeah,
have to be, be able to collect a paycheck and yet be an astronomer.
to do the work that you do, I'm sure it's a tiny field. However, there are amateur astronomers and they gather together, right?
That's right. That is a passion for a lot of people. A lot of people will take up astrophotography or just by eye telescope observing and derive a lot of pleasure from that. So that's a fantastic thing. There's thousands of those.
And let's spend just a little bit more time with that, because that might be a way for a person with not very much knowledge of astronomy, the night sky, to enter in and start to really enjoy it and learn some things from other folks that know more.
Absolutely. You always start at zero. So you might know this name of one star or something, but then you can learn the name of a second star and you will double your knowledge. And so it goes. Yeah. And some of the stars, of course, are planets instead. And
That's
then maybe you'll unpack a pair of binoculars and find out that the seven sisters is really several dozen sisters and things like that.
cool. And Cassiopeia is strange shape and all kinds of strange shape W, etc. And these groups, I'm guessing we would find them online, right? If you wanted to find a local stargazing group, would that be where you might send someone?
Absolutely. Thank goodness for Google. There's also an umbrella organization for the United States of America. It's called the Astronomical League.
Ooh, that's a special name. I want to be in that league.
Astronomicalleague.org, I think. And that's actually pretty cool. Yeah, they have a pin program, an observer pin. So you start with several topics you can start observing, like the moon, for example. And if you keep a careful notebook on your observations, they will award you your lunar observing pin.
Oh my
And that's
goodness.
very cool. It's very
That
cool.
would be very cool. I think that would be fun for a person of any age who wanted to get going into this area. Let's talk a bit about equipment, because we can start with our naked eyes, but it goes rapidly far up from there.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah, because it's so much fun. It's so much fun. And these telescopes are getting relatively cheap. And so you can buy one pretty easily. That's where joining a club is pretty important, because there will be other telescope users and they'll help you get the most out of your equipment, whatever it is. So it could start with binoculars. The cheapest telescope to look through is called a Dobsonian telescope. And bigger is usually better. And of course, bigger is also more expensive. So got to be careful there. But a lot of people also tend to look at, they tend to go for astrophotography. So that is trying to take pictures of objects in the sky. And that's a little more technical. But the cool thing is you get a reward in the end, right? You get this beautiful image in the end.
Yes.
After a dozen not so beautiful ones, you finally score a good one. And that's a really good sense of accomplishment.
I think this is the moment where I need to give a shout out to my very good friend Bonnie from Laclede, because it was really her idea that I reach out and find a night sky person, and I'm so lucky, feel so lucky to have found you. But Bonnie is the first person that showed me that a photo of the night sky can really expand. I mean, it's really better than your naked eye. We were getting photos of the Northern Lights, and just looking up into the sky, would kind of see them. But then if you get even a decent camera on your phone, it just makes the whole thing greater. That's
Yep.
crazy
I was
fun.
very astounded to find out that most cell phones now have a dark sky mode where they will actually integrate for a while. That's really cool.
It's
That's
really
good.
cool, and the photos can be wonderful. So that's pretty cool. Thanks, Bonnie. And so we have our basic binoculars, our eyes binoculars, your first telescope, and then pretty soon you're paying money to have images from the Hubble, like you do. Tell us about that.
Okay, sure. And it's you don't have to be a professional. You can request time from the Hubble Space Telescope if you want, but let me forewarn you, the competition is brutal.
I bet.
So basically, Hubble Space Telescope fields thousands of proposals every cycle, and they are peer reviewed. So they get sliced and diced in about I think these days about 12 to 15% of the top proposals get telescope time. And so that's how that process works. And then the Hubble Space Telescope will point where requested and take observations of the kind requested, and then those data are then beamed down to the astronomer.
And you, however, have been granted Hubble time. Your work must be pretty darn important.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I mean, it's astounding, really, how soon you reach the end of human knowledge.
It's
There
astounding to me. I find that every day, nearly.
There's just so many things you don't know, so many basic things you feel like you ought to know that are very difficult.
So
Like
true.
what's the mass of a star? Yeah, I mean, that's a tough number to come up with.
So many questions still out there for us, and it's exciting that we still have so many. All right, we've talked a bit about astronomy groups. That's a good way to get going. Internet apps. Oh, internet apps can help you identify stars. That's true.
It's true. They have cell phone apps that they'll show you the night sky. Most of them sense your cell phone's orientation, so the screen will fill up with about the constellations, approximately what you're going to see. And they're kind of cool. They're great. You can learn the constellation names and learn some names of the stars. And they generally have the planets correctly placed as well, so you can find out where the planets are. The planets wander around, so you kind of have to keep tabs on them.
And look in the right part of the sky. That's true with so many of the night sky things.
Right.
So yes, I would think an internet app would really be helpful in that regard. And then there's always the good old-fashioned textbook, and you've got a source for decent textbooks for people.
I mean, yes, I recommend a textbook.
Being a
The
professor, I suppose.
a modern textbook is not hard to read. They're full of pictures and the language is quite folksy and relatable. There's a free one called OpenStax Astronomy, and that's Stax with an X, STAX, OpenStax.
Astronomy.
Just Google OpenStax Astronomy and you'll get to this free textbook. But there are a lot of textbooks, and I'm sure the authors would appreciate you buying a copy.
I would think so. Yeah, shout out to authors. We need you. So, folks, buy the books and online. We need to take a minute and talk about what happens at the planetarium because I would gotta think that's a great learning tool. Tell us the work you do there and why it might be worthwhile to take a visit down to Pullman.
Yeah, there's not that many planetaria sprinkled around. One's in Pullman, there's one up in Spokane. I don't know where they are in Idaho and Montana. It's a room with a domed ceiling, and then you got a projection system. So you can throw the night sky up there on the dome, and then you can teach about it. And it's a wonderful tool for basic astronomy. Just what's a horizon? What's the zenith? North, south, east, west. And then how does the sky move there? And constellations and seasons. It's really an amazing learning resource. So, yeah, we run one here. We have school groups up there. We have public shows as well every weekend down here in Pullman.
And I noticed some of them sound pretty interesting, and they must change over time, or they're not always the same ones.
We change it up as much as we possibly can. That's right.
Yeah. And are those, is there a cost for those for people that aren't just a student?
Well, you could certainly the weekend shows cost you $5, so
Oh,
it's a good investment, really.
the value. All right. So that's
We
kind of
charge
cool.
the $5 so that we can then turn around in the daytime and have school groups for free.
Okay.
So we try to get school groups with no charge.
That's great. That's a great way to help have the public help out the schools. And so that would be worth a trip. And I've gone online and found the planetarium website, and they do list what's coming up and what times and the cost and all of that. So for folks that are interested in a little road trip, it's pretty easy to get that information. And you have one other feature down in Pullman that not everyone has, and that is an observatory.
That's right. It's a historical observatory. It was installed in 1953, but parts of it are much older. It's a beautiful telescope. And the lenses were polished between 1887 and 1889 by the most talented opticians of the country near Boston, Massachusetts. And those that company made it for a person who then passed away before he could use
Oh.
it in the telescope.
Oh.
The family didn't know what to do, so they put it in a bank vault, and there it sat for decades until WSU got wind of it. And then about 1948, they started to build this observatory with a grant from Potlatch Lumber.
Oh,
So
cool. That's a great story.
that's the origin of this observatory and its historical telescope. So it's a 12-inch refracting telescope, which is an older style of telescope, and that it takes a great big dome to hold because it's 12 inches around, but it's 15 feet long. So that big tube has to sit in this dome. So we open that up about once a month for public star parties, and we train students. We do a few labs there, and we hope we can keep that thing going for a while more.
Yeah, that really sounds fun. Now, that might be another way for a person to find like-minded stargazing people, a star party. Another party that you mentioned to me, you mentioned the star parties before we began this talk, but you said occasionally a sidewalk astronomy party will pop up.
Yeah, they'll pop up. So this is usually organized by a club. There's quite a few astronomy clubs. You can find them through the Astronomical League or Google or whatever. But yeah, sometimes a club will just show up in a public place with telescopes and start showing random passersby some of the wonders of the cosmos. Because you can really see Saturn's rings. You can really see Jupiter's moons. There's just amazing stuff that most people aren't aware, you can just pretty cheaply and easily wow yourself with.
That sounds pretty fun. Well, it sounds like astronomers are fun people, and listeners here in the Sandpoint in the Panhandle area might want to consider getting their astronomer hat on and getting out and seeing some things in the night sky. Hey, is there anything we've missed? Anything you'd like to add? Any last little concluding comments?
Well, I love astronomy. I think people that even touch a little bit on astronomy become a little better connected to the world in which they live. And it's a really vast, really interesting world. And so I hope all people listening here might step outside and experience the wonder of a good night sky.
That's a great way to end this talk, and it's inspired me. Dr. Guy Worthy, I want to thank you for joining us here at KRFY this morning and telling us a bit about the vast amount of knowledge that you have about the universe and the galaxies. Thank you so much.
My deep pleasure, so grateful for the invitation.